I've gone hiking or to the mountains, not even on a through hike, just to the mountains, at a whole bunch of different stages in my life and a whole bunch of different needs and reasons. And the beautiful thing about long trails and the mountains is like they are what you need them to be, even if you don't know what you need them to be.
This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. Find us over at CascadeHikerPodcast.com.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I'm here to inspire you to get out on the trail. You putting in 2 mile hikes, 5 mile hikes? Are you still on the couch? Come on, let's go on a backpacking trip. I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. Next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what's your name and where are you from?
My name is Heather Anderson, also known as Anish, and I'm from Seattle, Washington.
Right on. Well, hey, I'm really excited to have you on. Thanks so much for coming on. And I did a little research here before, you know, getting into talking with you. And I really wanted to talk about, you know, your life before finding hiking. That's really intrigues me. You know, me being an overweight child, and I still am an overweight child. you know, can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, I mean, the hiking just wasn't part of my life growing up. Like, I grew up in the Midwest in Michigan, and there is actually a lot of really good hiking there, but I didn't know that until I was an adult. But it was just not something that my family did. My parents' version of camping was taking the camper and going to a KOA campground. And where there was like a swimming pool, you know, and evening activities. So, I mean, I did, you know, kind of outdoorsy play because my parents were big fans of not putting me in front of the TV. So, you know, I built forts in the woods and climbed trees and like kind of played outdoors, but it wasn't enough to keep me fit by any means. I hated gym class. I hated running. And I just, I was pretty overweight middle school and then into high school. I gained a lot of weight and was really inactive. My main hobby was reading and writing. And I still enjoy both of those things a lot. And that was pretty much all I did. I would exercise intermittently. Like I'd think, oh, I should probably try to lose weight. And then I would run, you know, for every day, like for a week. And then I'd be like, oh, well, I'm done doing that. And so, yeah, it never really got anywhere. Nothing ever really stuck. I didn't really like organized sports. I went to a small charity type based than, you know, your actual skill or enthusiasm based. And so it just wasn't for me. And it wasn't until I found hiking that I found like a physical thing that I actually enjoyed. Because I always enjoyed being outside. I just had no real outlet for making being outside active other than, you know, just, you know, running around the yard or whatever when I was really small.
You said you found hiking. How did you find hiking?
Well, I mean, it wasn't like I didn't know it existed. I did know it existed. and I was like, oh, I think I would really like that because I knew I liked being outside and being in the woods and stuff. And I remember when I was probably 16 or so, my parents, we decided to go up north in Michigan to the Porcupine Mountains. And this time we did not take the camper, but we rented a cabin.
Oh, okay.
So, but my dad was like, we're going hiking. And I'm okay. And so my dad and I were going to go do this hike up this escarpment to this overlook of Lake of the Clouds. It's supposed to be this classic hike. And I don't even know how long it is, but I don't think it's particularly long. I think it's maybe like 5 miles, which seemed very long to me back then.
Right.
But anyway, we head out into the woods and it's, you know, a long uphill and we went, in retrospect, we probably went a half a mile and my dad decided this was too much and we turned around and I was like, okay. So, I mean, I kind of had a little taste of hiking right there and, you know, I was like, oh, I really did enjoy that whole, you know, mile we did. But it wasn't really until I was in college and I got a summer job working at the Grand Canyon at the South Rim.
Oh, wow.
I just worked at one of the front desks of the hotels there. Yeah. I applied for the job because I wanted to see the Grand Canyon. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go and work there. My parents were just like, this is not logical and whatever, but I went and I got the job there. And, It's kind of a long and ridiculous story how my first hike was truly very terrible. But why not tell it? So I came home from college, I don't know, probably a week before I was supposed to get on the plane to fly out there. And I reconnected. This is my first, you know, summer. So I reconnected with two of my best friends from high school. They just lived, the one just lived down the street from my parents. And we were like back in their woods, tromping around by a creek. And I stepped on a fence. So basically I was barefoot and we were in like a flooded area and there was a broken piece of wire fence and the wire went like up into the sole of my foot. I literally had to like pull it out. So I had this huge deep puncture wound and I was like, oh, it'll be fine. And I decided to just ignore it. And the day before I was supposed to fly to the Grand Canyon, I came out into the kitchen and told my mom I needed to go to the hospital. And she's like, why? And I just turned my foot and there were these big puffy red lines running up my leg. I had a massive blood infection. And so they took me to the hospital and in the ER, they like cleaned out the wound and, you know, gave me all these antibiotics and stuff. And they're like, okay, come back in 2 weeks. And I'm like, well, I'm getting on a plane and going to the Grand Canyon for the summer. And he's like, well, I guess we'll just have to hope these antibiotics work, you know? And I was like, I don't know if he was joking or if he was serious, but I was just like, okay. So when I arrived at the Grand Canyon, I was too cheap to pay for a hotel on my layover in Las Vegas. So I flew to Las Vegas, attempted to sleep in the airport, which didn't really work, and then flew to the Grand Canyon. So I was battling a blood infection. I was jet lagged and I was at 7,000 feet for the first time in my life when I arrived at the Grand Canyon and I hadn't really slept in like 48 hours. When I met my roommates and they were like, would you like to go hiking with us tomorrow morning? And I was like, okay. And so we got up bright and early, you know, I'd finally gotten like a few hours of actual sleep and, they were going to hike down to Indian Gardens, which is about halfway down to the river. And then turn around, come back up. And we all had to be at our orientations that afternoon. So we got up really early and we head down and I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm sick. You know, I'm on antibiotics. I don't really remember much. I was probably in like sandals from Walmart and like jean cutoff shorts, you know, because I mean, I didn't know. I hadn't really gone hiking before. I probably didn't have any food with me. I probably had like a 20 ounce water bottle. I mean, just like the classic underprepared canyon hiker. And there were, I think, like five of us starting out. And one by one, the rational, sane ones who had hiked before turned around because they realized they needed to turn around to get back to the top in time for our orientation. And then there was this one girl, she was like a collegiate basketball player. So she was like 6 foot tall and really thin and athletic. And here was this little 200 pound, you know, 5 foot eight overweight, like non-hiker. And I was like, I am not turning around until she does.
Oh, yeah.
And she went all the way to Indian Gardens. So I went all the way to Indian Gardens. And then we're like, well, we have to get back to the top. And we turn around to leave. And they had like, there was a ranger there and there's like a thermostat. And it was said it was, or a thermometer, and it said it was 120 degrees in the sun, and the ranger was like, you shouldn't go up, and we're like, well, we have to, and he like tried to talk us out of it, and we just went, and it just, I thought I was gonna die. I mean, I was sick, I was jet lagged, I was, you know, on antibiotics, which you're supposed to stay out of the sun, you know, all these just things. I'd never hiked this far in my life, and she got ahead of me on the way up, but all I did was like, just kept telling myself I have to keep her in sight. And I got to the top and like, you know, eventually I recovered from all of these things. And so probably like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 days later, I was like, that was the awesomest thing I've ever done. And I want to do it again. Okay. And so that summer, like I just, every spare minute I was hiking in the canyon or around or whatever. And I just, that was when I like really, really, truly fell in love with it and realized that this was something that I could do and that it was outdoors. And just, I don't know, that special feeling that we all feel, all of us that are hikers, you know, and it was just like, I'd never felt that before. And I didn't even think of it as exercise. It was just like, I want to do this thing. And so even though it started out with a very like everything that could be wrong or bad type of experience, I still was able to see past all of that and really know that that was something I wanted to do.
Right. And
so that's what I mean by what I'm saying. Discovered it.
Yeah, that's an awesome story.
Yeah.
Waymark Gear Company, new sponsor on the show. Really excited about these heavy-duty ultralight backpacks. Go check them out, waymarkgearco.com. So they got three different ways here of ordering their packs. You get the full custom packs where you can choose all of your different colors on the pockets and the sides and the backs, the straps. You can even pick the hip belts or no hip belt, but you can pick the color of the hip belt. It's kind of cool. My daughter had a lot of fun. She just went on and ordered one, and she kind of got like a rainbow of colors and stuff. So it's pretty cool. And then they have the semi-custom packs, so you know you get a little bit less options. And then the ready-made packs, you don't get to choose anything. They're all ready to go. And those ones, I believe, are a little bit cheaper. So anyway, yeah, so go over to Waymark Gear Company and check out their packs. Tell them Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you. Also, just to let you know, they have some day packs on the way. They did do some fanny packs. I'm not sure if that's going to stick around. They were pretty cool looking. WaymarkGearCo.com. How did you go from the Grand Canyon to finding the Appalachian Trail?
So I had heard of the Appalachian Trail before then. I'd actually heard of it when I was still in high school. And I had told my parents I wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail when I graduated high school. And they were like, no, you're going to college. And so I forgot about that idea. And I don't even know why. I just think I read about it. And I was like, you can walk from Georgia to Maine? Like, that's the coolest thing ever. I want to do that. I didn't know anything about it. I just thought that sounded amazing that you could walk that. There was a trail and you could walk that far. So that summer when I was at the Grand Canyon hiking a lot, like there was one of my coworkers that he, for some reason, was always willing to go on whatever like crazy plan I came up with. Cause I was always squeezing my hikes around like my work schedule. And so it would be like, oh, well, when we get off of work at 6 p.m., let's go do this trail. And we should be able to get back to the top by dark if we really hurry, you know, and, you know, just doing all this stuff. And he was always kind of like, all right, well, sure, I'll do that with you. And we were coming up out of one of these hikes. It was one of those things where we had gone down after work in the heat of the day, and it was like a west-facing trail, and we'd run out of water. And so we were kind of miserable hiking back up. And I had apparently at some point previous in the summer mentioned the Appalachian Trail to him. He was from Arizona. So, and he was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. And he brought it up. He was like, let's talk about how you would have to prepare to hike the Appalachian Trail. And so like, that was our topic of discussion to take our minds off of how miserable we were in our current situation. And so we talked about it for like, I don't know, an hour as we were climbing out of the canyon. And basically by the time we got to the top, I realized that I was going to do that after I graduated college. Cause now I had an idea of what hiking was like and how much I enjoyed it. And so like the idea of walking from Georgia to Maine seemed like something I really, really wanted to do. And at that point I was like, well, once I graduate college, like I can just hand that diploma to my parents and be like, all right, I got this for you. And now you can't stop me. I'm going to go hike the AT. Nice. And that's basically what I did.
And so where were you at physically when you started the trail then?
So when I got back from that summer at the Grand Canyon, I took up running, the thing that I had most despised my entire life. And it was very slow jogging. When I started out, I couldn't run around the track. You know, I couldn't do a quarter mile. I would like run and then walk and then run and then walk. And I graduated college in 3 years. So it was over the next 2 years that I managed to work my way up to being able to run 8 miles continuously. And I ended up losing about 50 pounds before I started the AT. So I definitely was much more in shape than I'd ever been in my life. I wouldn't necessarily say I was in amazing shape, but I definitely had transitioned from being just complete couch potato to at least being moderately active and, you know, reduce some of that excess weight before I hit Springer Mountain in May of 2003.
Wow, that's awesome. And so along that hike, is that kind of where you got the idea to possibly then go on to, like, I think your next hike was a PCT. So during that hike, was that kind of, you know, just kind of the next progression?
Yeah, absolutely. When I started the AT, I didn't even know that the other trails existed. I think I was somewhere in Virginia or something when somebody told me about the PCT and the CDT. And I was just flabbergasted that there were other trails that were like 2,000 miles long. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to do those too then. Like, it just, you know, because I loved thru hiking pretty much immediately. And so as soon as I found out that the other trails existed, yeah, I was like, all right, well, I'll do those next.
Right on. So, yeah, so you have done all three. And then I saw that you did the Arizona Trail as well.
Yes. Yep. I did the Arizona Trail in 2016.
Nice. And in the meantime there too, maybe I've missed some other spots, but looked like you worked at Glacier National Park as well.
Is that yeah. True? So between the AT and the PCT, the first times I worked at Glacier. And then I also worked at Glacier again the summer after I finished my first Triple Crown in 2007.
So I imagine you got quite a bit of hiking in there as well, huh?
Yeah, my goal was to hike all 700 miles of trail in the park, and I think I've hiked a little over 600 in those two seasons.
Wow, that's awesome. That's a cool goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I kind of wanted to ask this question because I know that, you know, like with your growing up and with your weight issues that you had and, you know, overcoming that and stuff and some other things that have happened through your time. I wanted to ask, you know, do the mountains really heal?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've gone hiking or to the mountains, not even on a thru hike, just to the mountains at a whole bunch of different stages in my life and a whole bunch of different needs and reasons. And the beautiful thing about long trails and the mountains is like they are what you need them to be, even if you don't know what you need them to be. You know, they can be challenging when you need to be challenged. They can be healing when you need to be healed. They can be comfort when you need comfort. And they're definitely a very powerful place and that you can really reconnect and recenter and heal whatever it is that you're needing.
That's cool. I love that. Anastasia Allison hosts a podcast locally here in Washington called the Inspired Adventurepreneur Podcast. And I reached out to her and she had a question right in this same little area. And without getting too personal or whatever, what is a moment on the trail that allowed you to have more clarity about something in your normal life off the trail?
Oh, there's been a lot of those moments over the years. And I think that, there's been I've had a lot of growth, especially over the FKTs that I've done. And those have had applications in my day-to-day life. But I think they can really be distilled into two general concepts. And one of those is acceptance and one of those is mindfulness. And those translate to my life on and off the trail. I think that when you're through hiking, it really cultivates this attitude of acceptance, because you know it happens when you're out there and there's literally nothing you can do about it. You just have to deal with it. You know, your tent collapses in the night, or you drop your water filter down the mountain, or whatever. You know, you miss your box. You know, there's just stuff that happens, and you know, you can get all angry about it and stuff like that, but in the end there's really actually not a lot you can do. You just have to accept that, okay, this is what happened, and then you have to come up with what you're going to do and your solution. And, you know, the other thing is when you're moving at 3 miles per hour or less consistently for months on end, you really get back into this natural state and it teaches you to be mindful of where you are and what's going on around you, and being able to keep that focus and mindset when you're in your non-hiking life is really important, because our society is so fast paced and there's so much stimuli and there's so much noise and drama and everything coming at you all the time. And being able to kind of keep yourself at a 3 mile per hour pace and have some distance, I think is really healthy and really important. So those are kind of the two overarching things I've learned to apply.
That's great. Oh man, what are you most proud of looking back at your accomplishments in hiking or running, and possibly, you know, your parents who didn't want you to really even go, you know, hiking before college and stuff. What do you think they're proud of you for?
Well, I'm the proudest of the fact that I've gone and done what it is that I wanted to do, regardless of being afraid. You know, I've had a, you know, there's a lot of things to be afraid of out in the woods, whether it's reasonable or not. And I'm not unafraid, but I've not let that stop me. So I'm proud of overcoming fears and doing those things. And I don't really know as far as what my parents think. I know my mom is proud of me for my accomplishments, but I don't really have any. I don't know. I haven't really had that conversation. I don't know. I can't answer for them. Can't answer that.
Yeah, no, that's totally fine. Your TEDx was great, by the way. You talk about your fairy tale, and sometimes your achievements can make me feel like you are kind of a fairy tale based on some of the questions I got from my listeners. Shannon Cunningham, she said, did you really sleep standing up on the trail sometimes?
I have fallen asleep while walking or running before. It's just like falling asleep at the wheel when you're driving. You just wake up a few seconds later. But that's not like a normal everyday thing for me. It's happened, you know, in the course of attempting very prolonged efforts, like when I attempted the John Muir Trail FKT, or running like 100-mile ultramarathon where you're up all day, all night, and all the next day type of thing. I don't do that regularly, no.
What about, she also brought up, do you still, or have you mixed your Oreos with the coconut oil?
Oh yeah. It's funny how like taking a picture of something that was supposed to be like, oh my God, I can't believe this is all I have left to eat, has become, this is all Anish eats.
Right.
That was very much like a desperation meal. Those were like the last few things I had in my bag. And I think I put a picture online once about it. No, I don't eat Oreos because I have been diagnosed as gluten intolerant. So Oreos are no longer something I eat. I do eat coconut oil when I'm on the trail. I think it's a really good source of healthy fats. And so by and large, no, I don't really eat cookies and things like that anymore because gluten-free ones are very expensive and I can't afford that.
Right on. Well, you know, Shannon Cunningham, she's a she writes a blog called Must Hike, Must Eat. So she's really into that kind of stuff. And she didn't ask this question, but since we're talking about it, what do you tend to eat on the trail?
Well, I try to basically have a really healthy whole food framework. So I try to eat really nutritious dinners that are really high in protein and fat, and then something really high in quality ingredients, nutritious ingredients, you know, for lunch and then breakfast. And then I fill in with a variety of just different snacks. I ate a lot of dried fruits and a variety of just different whole food bars that are gluten-free. Ate a lot of pepperoni and cheese, and I do some dehydrated meals by like Paleo Meals to Go and Backpacker's Pantry, the ones that are gluten-free. Ate a lot of chocolate. Trail butter, that's one of my staples, which is a local Portland company. They have, it's a blend of nut butters with coconut oil and honey, and then they come in a variety of flavors. But yeah, so I just try to aim for things that are nutrient and calorically dense, and then I just buy a lot of chips because I have a weakness for chips. Yeah.
Nice.
So I pack a very nutritious framework and then fill in with chips and Reese's.
That's interesting. I know, because you know, you've done so many you know, the ultra runs and these FKTs, the fastest known times. Some people in that world don't eat very healthy. So is that something
right.
that you try to be a steward for?
Yeah, I mean, I try to eat healthy, nutritious food every day. I don't, you know, the when I'm hiking is when I'm through hiking, or if I'm running a race, is probably about the only time you'll find me eating, you know, gummy worms or Reese's or chips, you know, and they're still not the majority of my food out there, because I can tell, like, if I have a section where I had to resupply at a gas station and I am eating peach rings and chips, you know, I don't feel good. And I feel like I eat more food with feel less energy than when I'm, you know, eating the stuff I put in my boxes with a few of those treat type things thrown in. I've definitely noticed a huge difference. You know, when I did my first AT hike, I was dirt poor because I had just graduated college, and I basically ate peanut butter and Pop-Tarts, you know, and Oreos the whole way. And I mean, I was like malnourished. I probably had scurvy or something when I got done. Like I lost a tooth and my hair was like falling out. And, you know, so I was in like rough shape. And like when I did the PCT and the CDT after that, like there was an improvement in my nutrition, but it was still like the typical hiker food. It was Pop-Tarts and peanut butter and cookies and ramen and, you know, that sort of stuff. And even between my two FKTs, obviously getting my gluten intolerance diagnosed made a huge difference. And so it's hard to kind of pick between that, how much of it was that and how much of it was nutrition. But, you know, I ate that similar hiker diet on my PCT, FKT. And then for the AT, it was all gluten-free and it was whole food based, and it was focused more on nutrition than it was on just junk. And I felt night and day different. Number one, I was healthier and I wasn't eating something that was like poisoning my body. But it was also, I feel like the nutrition level was much, much higher. And I feel like it made a huge difference, at least for me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you didn't lose any more teeth, huh?
Nope, I haven't lost another tooth, so
good
on that.
All right, well, over at runhikelivelove.blogspot.com, you've got a ton of awesome stuff in there. One thing I wanted to point people to as we're talking about food here is you've kind of put some of your, you know, what did you pack in your pack when you're hiking some of these FKTs or different trails and stuff. So I think that's cool that you put that out there. Have you gotten a lot of feedback and people like that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm really not very gear oriented or like what's in my pack oriented. So it's kind of it's nice to me that like people are asking, like, what did you eat and what did you carry and what did you use? Because otherwise I'd be like, well, I don't know, because I don't remember. I don't remember what I had in my pack, you know, on my first AT hike. It was probably crappy anyway, but it's nice because then like it kind of like makes me write it down, and I like being able to share that information with people because I know I benefit from reading what other people carry and what other people eat. I'm super snoopy when it comes to like camping with other people. Like I want to know what they're eating because I'm always looking for new ideas, because I get stuck in my pattern and I like eat the same, like I will eat the same thing the entire hike because I'm just not very creative when I'm out there, so I have to get different ideas from other people. So I know that there's some definite benefit in that, and so gives me a little bit of a focus and a place to put that information so other people can hopefully benefit from it.
All right, I know I talked to you about how excited I am to join up with Lux Hiking Gear. That's luxe-hiking.gear.com. You know, a small company here out of Washington State. And it's just, like I said before, it's just better to kind of check out these smaller companies. They care a lot about their product, and it's not going walking into the big box store and getting that markup and just getting the same tent everybody else has. I did go with the Hex Peak TP two-person tent last time. And or not last time, but that's what I got. And anyway, they have a lot of options. There's even some really cool like car camping type tents. They offer stoves and stuff for them with that. But like I said, the Hex Peak is kind of the one I went with for backpacking. There's even like the winter teepees and all kinds of stuff. Really, the teepee brand is what they have. I also got one of their trekking poles. I kind of like to support these companies, and I think you should too. Go check them out. LuxHikingGear.com. That's luxe-hiking.gear.com. I was kind of researching some of your ultra runs, and you've got a really impressive list for somebody like me that doesn't ultra run. I was kind of noticing looking at it, you know, typical, you started out like, I believe on there anyway, it says, you know, 2009, 2010, like, you know, a few a year, maybe a couple a year, and then you just, it seems like, exploded in 2011, 2012, and you just went on like a ton of these ultra runs. Did this help prepare you for these fastest known times?
Yeah, it definitely did. It wasn't like I knew that was what I was doing at the time.
Right.
But it definitely did. And in some ways, it hindered, and in other ways, it helped. So I kind of overdid it in 2011 and 12, and I was actually injured leading into my PCT FKT in 2013. I jokingly refer to it as my couch to FKT. Most people do a couch to 5K, but I was injured for almost like a year and a half. But I literally didn't run or hike for the 6 months prior to starting that. That hike, that trail, actually it was more like 8 months, because I had an injury. And so I really just was very out of shape when I started, that June. But, the lessons I learned about myself and about fueling and, about, you know, running 100 milers where you're up all night and like doing a lot on very little sleep and, you know, all of those things, those provided a lot of depth to build on top of my hiking skill set. And those really did help me get through my first FKT. And then obviously just the lessons I learned there are what I've taken to others. But yeah, the ultra running certainly was a key preparatory role.
Right on. Well, I didn't want to get too much into gear, but I did want to talk about your dresses. I love your dresses. And, you know, what kind of dresses are you wearing out there? And, you know, is that something you're still wearing?
Yeah. So it's funny because I started wearing dresses when I worked that first summer in Glacier. And I can't even exactly remember why. I think it was just because I found, and I'm pretty sure it was like a beachwear cover up from like Walmart. And I was like, this thing is so light. Like, this is way lighter than, you know, any hiking, you know, pair of pants or whatever. So I just started wearing it. And then I was like, oh, this is actually, I really like this. Like, this is a great thing to hike in. So when I started the PCT the following year, I had a skirt and, I didn't know. And it was like an ankle length skirt. And so by the time I got to Kennedy Meadows, it was more like a shredded mini skirt because there's a lot of pokey plants in the desert. So, I made myself a new skirt out of just like basically a piece of rayon fabric. Like, and I basically made it like that beach cover up. Like, it was basically like a sarong, like that I just tied around myself, and I hiked the rest of the way to Canada wearing that. And, then I wore that again, that same, I modified it once I got home to my sewing machine, right, made it a little bit more like a real skirt, and wore that back to Mexico when I hiked the CDT the following year. And so after that, I started picking up dresses and skirts at thrift shops, mainly because they were cheap. And I'd seen how well, like, just like a piece of inexpensive rayon fabric will, or polyester will work. And I was like, well, I'm not going to spend a fortune on high-tech hiking clothes if, you know, a piece of, you know, thrift store thing will work just as well. So that's actually how I started wearing them. And, yeah, I've kept wearing them. I mean, sometimes I hike in pants or shorts or whatever, but I definitely like dresses and skirts. They're really comfortable. They're pretty versatile because you can layer with them. And, so I do still do that. I do have a few like actual tech, dresses now, but, you know, I just kind of alternate. Like, sometimes it kind of, thrift stores are hit or miss. So right now I'm pretty low on thrift store dresses because I've kind of used up all my really cute ones. but I did the CDT this year. I wore a Mont Bell trail dress, and it was really comfortable. It was you could tell that it was like a real tech dress because it did perform better than like a thrift store dress. But I'll probably try like a skirt version of it next time, just because I think that the skirt is more versatile because you can wear like a shirt and you can, I don't know. I felt like the skirt would be more versatile than the dress, but, or I'll just go to like the thrift shop tomorrow and find like an awesome, you know, cheetah print dress, and then I'll be wearing that. I don't know. We'll see.
On the lookout for Cheetah Print.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, my 5-year-old daughter, I bought her a hiking dress last summer, and she just loves it. She looks so cute in it, too. They just seem so, like, the right thing to do.
Yeah, it is. It's like I tell people, I'm like, it's actually really functional and comfortable, and if you're going to have to, especially if you're through hiking and you got to wear the same thing every day, you might as well, like, have something cute that makes you happy. And, you know, wearing cute dresses makes me happy, so I wear them.
Good. Who do you look up to?
Oh, I look up to a lot of people. I don't know, this is always a hard question because there's like a lot of people, but, one of my biggest like hiking role models is, my friend Apple Pie. Just because she's just a few years older than me, but she has just hiked everything. And, you know, she's kind of like me. She's, you know, structured her life to hike as much as she can, and she's done a really amazing job with it. And you know, anytime I'm like, oh, there's this trail, I'm like, have you heard of this trail? She's like, oh yeah, I did that, you know, 5 years ago. And I'm just like, okay, well, tell me all about it because I want to do this now. And so she's just like, and she's, you know, she's got a lot of great wisdom and advice, and she's kind of like a big sister to me in that. And you know, I, you know, as far as like role models and heroes, people I don't know, you know, John Muir is going to always be my idol and my, you know, when I first, you know, went hiking, or, you know, like after that summer at, the Grand Canyon, like I went back and checked out all of his books from the libraries and like just read them, you know, and, you know, just like feeling like this guy gets it, this guy gets, you know, he can put into words like what I experience and what I feel when I'm out there. And, yeah. So.
No, that's good. Yeah, I like that. What do you say to that overweight person that's sitting at home on the couch to motivate them to get out on a hike? I mean, here I am, you know, overweight on my couch. What are you saying to me?
You know, if you like hiking, then go do it. You don't have to be skinny to hike. that's the beauty of it. Like, human beings were made to walk. I mean, we evolved as a species migrating across continents in herds, you know. That's just what we do. We walk long distances. We do it well, and you know, it's just natural. We're built for it, and it doesn't matter how much you weigh or, you know, how fit you are. I mean, goodness gracious, when I started hiking, I couldn't even run a quarter of a mile. But it's just, if you enjoy it, you go out and do it. I mean, fitness will come, you know, if you stick with it. It's not, I don't think hiking is necessarily something to do just for fitness, because I think hiking is so much more holistic. Like I said, it's something natural for us. And so it's healing to our bodies and our minds. And, you know, I just think that if you enjoy it and you do it, you know, the fitness will follow that, and not worry about trying to like get fit to hike. That's my two cents.
Yeah, no, I like that. I mean, I just get out there, you know, and I try to encourage everybody else to get out there too.
Yeah.
Do you have any books or blogs or podcasts that you recommend?
I am not much of a blog reader or podcast listener, mainly because I'm usually out doing stuff rather than reading about what other people are doing. But I definitely enjoy Jennifer Farr Davis's writing. I don't really read a lot of people's trail stories, but she does a really good job. She's very relatable, and I enjoy her stuff. And then, I like the writings of John Muir for sure. Yeah. I think that they're timeless, and they're definitely not as hard to read as, you know, something like Thoreau or Whitman, which can be a little bit tedious. as far as like outdoor stuff, yeah, I definitely recommend Jennifer Farr Davis's writing and.
Yeah, those are two awesome recommendations. You were in a book, Liz Thomas's Through Hiking. You had a little spot in there, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, if somebody's looking for a book you know, to plan a hike, or, you know, just wants a reference and compendium. Like I said, my friend Apple Pie, I'm always asking her about trails, and she's like a living compendium of all these trails she's done. So Liz's book is like a great book full of, you know, trails. So it's like got synopses of all these different trails, and then, you know, all this instructions on like kind of how to go about planning a through hike and doing a through hike, and without telling you to just do it a certain way. You know, it's a great resource. And yeah, I was really pleased that she included me in that book, in a little bit of a section there on like ways to kind of improve get your body ready for the rigors of through hiking, because it's a little bit different than just going out for a day hike or whatever. So yeah, I was super honored to be included in that project.
Yeah, and I noticed on your website too, you have a section on your website that you talk about personal training and endurance coaching services. Is that something that that you want to talk about? Like, what is that?
I coach, do it online, so my clients can be anywhere. And mainly I focus on people who are long distance running or preparing for a long distance hike, whether it's a section or a through hike. I do that coaching online. I have, you know, a handful of clients that I work with, and it's been pretty rewarding, especially since I've helped a lot of people get ready, especially older folks prepare for their first through hikes. And so it's been kind of fun and a rewarding thing to work with, and see people get to fulfill a lifelong dream and be a tiny little part of it.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, it's rewarding for you and for them.
Yeah.
What about you? What about you? You talked about that you like to read and write a lot. Are you ever going to write a book?
I'm actually working on my book right now. It's due out sometime in 2019. Being published by Mountaineers Books. That's been kind of my project for the last couple months, and spending a lot more time in front of the screen than I would like, but it'll be worth it to finally get that book into print and into people's hands.
Right on. That's exciting. I know I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too.
Well, where can people find you besides your website, or is that the best place to go to find everything there is about Heather Anderson?
So I'm working on revamping my website, which is not done yet, but I will post that. Right now, the best places to follow are either my Instagram or my Facebook, both just Anish Hikes, that's where I post most of my content, and that's where I'll keep people up to date on my book and my next hikes, whatever those end up being, and then obviously, like, I refer back to my blog sometimes and things like that, but Instagram and Facebook, pretty much the main things right now, and soon, hopefully in the next couple months, I'll have a website up that kind of draws all those disparate pieces together into one spot.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, cool. We'll be on the lookout for that. Okay. One quick question before we leave here. What about, is there any trails out there that you are on your list that you really want to hike? Like the long trails?
Like all of them. pretty much every time I meet a trail, I'm like, I want to hike that. I would say like the top of my list is the Hayduke Trail, the Great Divide Trail, Sierra High Route, and then some international things that aren't really trails. They're just, they would be routes I design on my own. So we'll see. Hayduke and Sierra High Route have been basically at the top of my list for like the last 5 years, and I just haven't worked into my schedule to do yet, but they're right at the top.
Well, that's going to be harder with writing a book too.
Yeah. So, yep.
Well, right on. Well, thanks so much for taking your time and coming on the Cascade Hiker podcast.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Don't forget to join the Patreon page. Find me at patreon.com/Cascade Hiker Podcast. Also, hit me up with an email, Rudy@CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Find me on Facebook. My Facebook page is Cascade Hiker Podcast. Twitter. Find me at @in_CascadeHiking. And I'm Cascade Hiker Podcast on Instagram. Thanks, Whiskey Fever, for letting me use this track here, Tall Grass, off their album Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. Go find them at ReverbNation.com/Whiskey Fever. Hey, see you next week.
You were sweet like honey on a heartbeat. You were fine like wine in the sunshine. I could feel you coming on strong. Could never be wrong, could never be wrong. See her laying down in the tall grass, playing mandolin in a white dress. So come running when I hear that song. It could never be wrong, it could never be wrong. Where you wanna run, baby, I'll run too. I would leave this world for a beautiful girl if I could just find you.